Hello and welcome to Ayurvedic Healing and Beyond podcast, and this is your host, Dr. Vignesh Devraj. Today we have Salila Sukumaran, a health coach specializing in Ayurveda from California. She is a TEDx speaker and comes from an Ayurveda lineage in Kerala. And today we are discussing about the foundation of Ayurvedic teaching, that is Dinacharya. Now, Dinacharyas are the daily rituals that compounds to give you longevity and vitality. Now, today's podcast, we are going to discuss how Dinacharya is for a person living a modern, busy lifestyle and how they can integrate these ancient sacred rituals into their own living. Now, I really hope you enjoy this podcast. Hello, Salila. So
Hi,
happy
Vignesh.
To have you finally in the podcast. We finally managed to find the time. So, Salila, what's your journey? What brought you into Ayurveda to where you are right now, helping so many people finding their Ayurvedic life, doing their Dinacharya? So what is that story? What made this happen to you?
Thank you so much for inviting me to your world famous podcast.
Pleasure.
Now.
Pleasure.
Yeah. What brought me to Ayurveda? Actually, I was born into Ayurveda. My family from my parents' lineages, both mother's and father's side, on the maternal side, were all Ayurveda physicians. My great-grandfather, Kunjan Panikarashan, was a Vaidya, had a Sabhamadam, had a training academy for the Travancore king. So Ayurveda was always in the family, but I had no idea that it was Ayurveda because I thought everybody else's family was also doing similar things. You know, like my crazy family was doing, making lehiams, which are like lickable jams and kashayams and, you know, different kinds of pathyas and apathyas, ways of managing different life stages and situations, fevers, colds, coughs. I thought every family was like that. But when I moved to America and I lived a very Western lifestyle because I was brought up in the defense forces outside of Kerala and my life was very Western oriented, when I came to America and lived an even more Western oriented life, I lost my health completely. That was around 2015 and I had suffered 5 miscarriages in a span of 3 years. And that really nosedived my health. And once I reached a point of no return, I came back to Kerala and my mother said, you have to go back to Ayurveda. You have to go back to the rituals.
And that's where we met first.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's where we met. And that was my complete realization of how important those rituals that had kept me healthy throughout my life actually were. And the Dinacharyas that I was doing that I had completely left off in the pursuit of a more Western, modern sort of life, right? All that I needed to incorporate back to keep this Vata body in good shape.
And what was that aha moment? I mean, you did your Panchakarma. I still remember that almost 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
2015,
mm-hmm.
when you came right. to Sitaram. And at that point of time, was there a resistance to try it out in the beginning? And after going through that, what was that aha moment? Oh, this is... How come I didn't know this before? Was there some moment like that?
I don't remember being resistant because after the health situation that I had been through, I was ready to try anything. So
it was like a last straw hope.
It was the last straw. I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a try. I don't understand this. I couldn't even pronounce the names of the medicines that you gave me, like Gandharva Hastadi and all that, right? I was like, what is this? But my consciousness, even though it was in a very dense state at that time where I couldn't appreciate what was being offered to me, when I started to follow the steps that Dr. Bhagavati, you know, laid out, and then you kind of created a treatment plan for me at that time, and then I had a complete nervous breakdown. And through that, I realized that in spite of that immense pain I was going through, these Ayurvedic rituals, the daily waking up, the abhyangams, the proper diet, you know, the walks in the park, the looking at nature, the meditation, the yoga, all this was holding me through. And I always felt a sense of safety. So during that phase, when I realized how important these rituals are, these are sacred rituals because ultimately our body is sacred. This is the only space suit we have. And without caring for this space suit, there is no following our purusharthas, the, you know, the four reasons for which we live, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, right? Following righteousness, creating abundance, following our desires, finally enlightenment. If we are not going to take care of this spacesuit we have, there is no point of anything. Mm-hmm. So being at Sitaram, going through that Panchakarma, just underscored this point for me that Dinacharya is it. Yes, medicines are there, doctors are there, health will be there. But every day, the responsibility of taking care of my mind, body, and spirit is my own.
I still remember those times, like how much you were going through, and looking back now, how many people that you're helping. You know, only when a person undergoes such a deep transformation, then they take it as a calling.
Right.
Like, I'm a clear example of that, because even though I was forced into Ayurveda to become an Ayurvedic doctor, but I was doing exactly opposite of what is told there.
Mm-hmm.
And going through this Panchakarma was my wake-up call, in fact, to understand what it does, what it can do to people.
Right.
But not for everyone. To the right patient, the right medicine always helps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your journey so far,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you come across a lot of patients who come across and tells you, not patients, like people coming across and tell, this is a very ancient concept.
Mm-hmm.
Why would mm-hmm. we need this in the modern life when we mm-hmm. have so many new technologies?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Isn't this some garbage that is mentioned 5,000 years old?
Right.
Now, how do you address that? And I think, as far as I see your work, you know, you really hit the nail by saying that as long as we make these daily habits, the sacred rituals, the dinacharyas right on place, you know, this will keep the foundation for longevity and vital. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's the first chapter in Ashtanga Hridayam, Dinacharya.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So how do you come across people's resistance when they come across, okay, why should I practice this? Now, mm-hmm. what are the needs to it? And also, do people come to you only when they have this last row hope, like you had?
Right.
Or will they always come across before they get into a disease? I'm just curious to know from your perspective.
Yeah. So many people come to me not because they are resistant, because again, you know, like you said, they have reached a point where Western medicine isn't helping them, or they don't like the options that Western doctors are giving them.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to me and they think that, okay, I don't want to go to a doctor, but I want to fix my daily lifestyle and diet and see if Ayurveda can help me. And you're so right. We do have this feeling, especially in India.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that so much in America. In America, people appreciate these Vedic sciences because they have done it all. Yes, they have done it all. Now they know that the Vedic sciences are like it's the raft that is going to take them across and help them achieve their highest potential. But in India, because we were a colonized country, we still have a lot of these British colonial overhang that it has to be modern. Only then it will make sense. Only then it is progressive. If I'm going to do something that was written in a Veda 5,000 years ago, then I'm regressive. It's not good for my body. And I'm doing something that's weird and crazy, right? So when somebody like that comes to me, I try and tell them that, look, this spirit is ancient. This body is a billion years old. This still works exactly the same way it was forged thousands of millions of years ago. So the people who understood and studied this body over hundreds of generations knew what they were talking about. Because the basic human needs of love, of sex, of longevity, of eating well, this body has not changed much, of sleep, right? So modern science, every year there's updates. Every year they keep going back and saying, oops, no, that doesn't work anymore. Let's look at this other way. But Ayurveda says that this is what it is. This is fundamental. It's like gravity. It's not going to change. It's fundamental physics, really. Vata, Pitta, Kapha, the energy of movement, the energy of circulation, the metabolic energies, the energy of sustenance and structure. It's basic physics. It's not going to change. So when we are working with Ayurveda, we are working with basic physical mechanisms of the body. It's not going to change. And once they start incorporating even 2, even 3, I tell them 2%, just make 2% change. When they start doing that, they see amazing differences.
Mm.
I have clients who are NASA scientists, who handle departments of like 700 scientists. They come to me saying that, Salila, I've had this constipation for the last 20 years. I've had this mighty vata, like you say, right? Vata affliction for 20 years. I don't know what Ayurveda can do. I give them Trifla Rasayana and they come back a week later and they say, Salila, this is a miracle. My body is functioning beautifully.
Mm.
That is the power of this technology.
Mm. This 5,000 year, I have a joke considering that. So I used to always say, I think Ayurveda is a 5,021 year old.
Mm-hmm.
When I started studying, when I went for my first lecture for BAMS in 2002, so it's at 5,000 years, but still it's 5,000 years, but we are still 21 years ahead of that.
Yeah,
no, it's just the idea that...
Right, right.
So this idea that, you know, the modern medicine updates,
mm-hmm.
I think there is some good side to that.
Of course.
And the idea that Ayurveda doesn't update, it's a changeless law that gravity is the same. I think what you're saying is certain laws are the same because our brain is such an ancient organism.
Right.
But our technology around us, the lifestyle around us has been rapidly, exponentially changing and upgrading.
Right.
Just a few decades ago, a few decades ago, people did, it would take like 9 months to travel from one continent to another.
Right,
and today
right.
you are able to do that within less than 16, 17 hours of flight.
Right.
Now, some of the long haul flights are like bed and breakfast.
Right.
And you're reaching another continent.
It's almost a commute
together.
Now.
And our body is just not designed for such a lifestyle.
Right, right.
So, when our body is not designed to such a lifestyle, we are just going back to the basics. I think today, Ayurveda is becoming more relevant because we forgot the basics of our interaction with nature.
Totally, totally.
So when people ask, what is Ayurveda? It's just a documentation of how humans interacted with nature. When a person is interacting in this climate, in this food he's consuming, and when he's going through this kind of emotion, this is the outcome he's getting.
Mm-hmm.
So they documented it and then they came out with this idea. So we saw a correlation. When he is not doing this, when he's more doing this,
mm-hmm.
his longevity is better. And
true.
If he's having a good... It talks about Atulya Gotra.
Mm.
When a person is born to a Tulya Gotra, like the same... today we talk about when there is a genetic anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do the genetic anomaly test.
Mm.
So it was written long time ago, the correlation was Tulya Gotra and Atulya Gotra. And
wow.
when a person is born to a Atulya Gotra, the genes are the baby is very healthy.
Mm.
When it is born to a Tulya Gotra, there could be a lot of genetic anomalies.
Wow, yeah.
So they just documented.
That's amazing.
It's just a documentation of all the correlations.
Yeah.
And today what is happening, the word science has been hijacked by people in the laboratories.
Mm, right.
So whatever I could prove it in a laboratory setting, I say it is science.
Mm-hmm. True.
Science is actually a... You know, we are bridging the cause and effect.
Right, right.
So yes, there is a lot of benefits. I mean, today longevity that we all are enjoying is because of the antibiotics and painkillers.
True.
But today the problem is we just got succumbed to that. And it's like plastic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When plastic got invented, everybody was like crazy about it.
Mm-hmm.
It changed the dynamics of logistics. It changed the dynamics of transportation. The shelf life went over the roof of something that is perishable within few hours.
Right.
And now, because we are using so much of plastic, it is so dangerous to the planet and it is so dangerous to the sustainability.
Right.
We are thinking back. The same is happening with some of the chemicals that we are taking.
True.
On one hand, we are enjoying the benefits of this Western medicine.
Yeah.
Longevity is coming. But on the other hand, we missed what Dinacharya is talking about, circadian rhythm, talking about self-care rituals,
right.
talking about eating. You know, many people talk about what is the right method to eat. All these methods, the basics, no matter what technological advances come,
right.
we can never replace or put a pill and change you cannot take a pill and substitute for a good sleep.
Exactly.
You cannot take a pill and substitute for a good exercise. So I think that's the point that you're talking. And talking about the NASA scientists, there's a saying, only rocket science is rocket science. Even a rocket scientist.
They are humans.
It works with the same ancient mechanism.
Yeah.
So we need to get back to open those old manuals for what it does.
Totally.
So Salila, what are the sacred, you know, when you talk about Dinacharya, how do you put this across to a person who has never come across Ayurveda, what do you talk, how, what do you say, why Dinacharya is important? I see that that is one of your most important works.
Right.
And you do a course on this. And to all the listeners, I highly recommend to check out the course, which we'll put it in our show notes. But tell us more about why is this Dinacharya important?
So I developed 21 sacred Dinacharya rituals that are borrowed from all the Ayurveda rituals. I think there's over like 600 Ayurveda rituals, Dinacharya rituals that we can do, because India is so ancient and widespread. So many communities have so many different ways of managing this body and helping it live healthy and long and strong. So I've taken 21 of them for my extremely busy executive clients. So even if they do just those 21, and when you say 21, it sounds like, oh my God, 21, such a big number. I've broken it down into 7 sets of 3 sacred rituals. And then if they can do this around each other, it will take only about 30 minutes of their entire day's time, and they will be able to manage it. And then, you know, they can start with doing one set a day, and within a week, they can add all 7 rituals, 7 sets of rituals. So it, of course, begins with the waking up in Brahma Muhurta, and of course, ends with doing a Padabhyanga and getting a good night's sleep. Why do we do these rituals, right? Now, rituals are like a supportive framework. It's like a scaffolding to a building. If the building needs to be safe, the building needs to stand upright, there has to be a strong scaffolding. Every day, our body is assaulted by things that are happening in the macrocosm, in our environment, our relationships. Every minute, our mind is melting. Every minute, our agni, our digestive fire is being affected. Every minute, our energy levels are dropping, right? Our energy is cycling. It is cyclical. So we have to maintain this steady energy so we can be present to the people around us. We can make good decisions. We can make good choices for our own well-being. And we can get through the day in a way that we achieve our purusharthas, which are again, the dharma, the artha, the kama, the moksha. These 4 purusharthas, we are constantly going through the day, achieving something in these aspects on a daily basis. So at the end of the day, we can say, oh, good. I spent a good 24 hours. That 24 hours will translate into a good 7 days, into a good 1 month, into a good year, into a good life. That is what Dinacharya rituals do. They are helping this body carry the light of God within us, divinity within us, as long as we can, so that we are a light to the world. We can do God's work.
So let's jump into those rituals if you're open to sharing those.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I start with, of course, Brahma Muhurta. That is the number one ritual. Brahma Muhurta is about 96 minutes before sunrise. So it's not 4:30 as many people think. It is, you have to go to your Google site, look for your local sunrise time, go back 96 minutes. For example, if sunrise was at 6:36, we have to go back 96 minutes. So which would be 5 o'clock would be the start of Brahma Muhurta. The word Muhurta means it's a time frame. Brahma means this is the time of sattvic intelligence, right? If we wake up during this time, the Vata intelligence is high. Vata is high in the atmosphere. And just like if we were going to send a ship out to sail in the ocean, we want to make sure we catch the right wind. This is what we are doing with our body as well. We are waking up at the time when the wind is right for our body to then go forward and travel far. So 96 minutes, and it's a Muhurta. So it's a time frame. So it's a time frame of 48 minutes. So if you're like a student or a yogi, you wake up at 5 o'clock based on the example I gave, which was at 6:36 is sunrise, go back 96 minutes, 5 p.m. is your start of the Brahma Muhurta. Now, if you're lazy like me, then you wake up at 5:48. You're still in Brahma Muhurta. And then once you're up in Brahma Muhurta, what I ask to do is center yourself in gratitude. That's the first key ritual. Because God has given us another day to live, another day to walk on Mother Earth, another day to love and experience the beauty and the joy of life, right? We ground ourselves in gratitude during that time. And then the next step would be to get up, go to the bathroom, wash our hands, face, eyes, ears if possible, feet for sure. Because these hands, these surfaces, the legs, the indriyas, the sense organs, we've had some dreams during the night. There's been energy escaping through our body. When we wash our body with fresh water like that in the morning, we refresh our senses. We wash it off. We kind of get renewed and refreshed and we say, okay, that's done. Now I'm going to start my day. So that would be set one of the rituals. Then set two of the rituals would be to go out, get some fresh air, because that is the time where the dew is in the air, it's beautiful, it smells great, the breeze is refreshing, vata is circulating in the air. So once we have aligned our body to the external environment, naturally the vata in our body will also start to align to that, right? So then we get something to drink, like a hot drink. Mm-hmm. I prefer to make something like a gatvesti, which is a recipe of a pinch of carom, half a teaspoon of cumin, black cumin, half a teaspoon of coriander, half a teaspoon of fennel, boiled in about a liter of water. So what this does is it kickstarts the metabolism, it cleanses the tongue, it helps the agni revive. So when we went out, we are helping the vata. When we drink this gatvesti, we are helping the pitta. And then, we come back and we have a bowel movement. So now, because we went out, we took maybe a little walk, we drank this tea, we've initiated peristalsis, right? And now we come back and we have a bowel movement, we've cleansed our body. Mm-hmm. Now our body is ready. So this is a good time for us to sit in meditation if we want to. Mm-hmm. If not, we can move on to the next set of rituals, which would be our hygiene rituals, which would be cleaning our mouth, right? Because that's where all the bacteria has collected throughout the night. So we start with examining our tongue. This is ritual set three. So we are examining our tongue to see whether my kapha is high, whether my vata is high, or is my pitta really high. Mm-hmm. So if we see some fissures on the tongue, we see dryness, we see a white coating, we know that our agni is manda, it's low. We have, if there's a fissures, we know that it's, vata is high. If we have a lot of redness, we know that pitta is high. Fissures could also mean if they're bleeding or if they're painful, there's ulcers, then of course pitta is high. If we see some kind of scallops around our tongue, mm-hmm. again, we know that our vata is high. So I go into details in the courses that I have, but for now, for us, this is like good to know that, okay, there's something that is not right now, and let me do the correct rituals to get myself back to health. So as soon as we see the tongue, then we get an idea of, okay, this is where I'm at today. This is how my food should be. If my tongue is showing that my energies are low, my agni is low, I should eat light meals. If my tongue is showing that my pitta is high, then I should make sure I don't go hungry. Mm-hmm. I should make sure I'm nourishing adequately. So then we clean our teeth, right? We brush our teeth. And then we scrape our tongue, which is super critical because all this bacteria goes into our gut. And then, all those viruses and everything, their DNA can mix into our bloodstream and create havoc, right? So we are cleansing, we are refreshing our mouth. Now, the next step is I believe it's the third set, is kavala, right? When we are doing some kind of oil pulling. Now, I suggest using sesame oil because I believe sesame oil is the best, because coconut oil is something that you see everywhere. People mention coconut oil as excellent for mm-hmm. oil pulling. I personally feel sesame oil is dantya. It's already, the shlokas on sesame oil already mention out that it is excellent for teeth. So we use that to do a little bit of oil pulling for maybe 5 minutes, 7 minutes at the most. And then after kavala, now we have irritated all the vata, pitta and kapha in the head, right? In the head region, all the energies are disturbed. Now we have to do shamana. We have to do calming. Mm-hmm. So we take a little bit of ghee, apply it in our eyes as anjana, as coal, because we are all looking at devices all day long. Mm-hmm. Our eyes need a little bit of calming. Our eyes mm-hmm. need that pitta needs to calm. So a little bit of organic ahimsa ghee would be really helpful in calming the eyes down. Mm. And then applying a little bit of oil to our nose, which is nasya. Again, sesame is great, almond is great, ghee is great. If somebody is starting out, these are all great oils to start with, mm-hmm. just one drop in each nose. And if somebody's already advanced, they know how this is, they can try Anutaila.
Mm-hmm.
Once this oil goes in, it is nourishing all these bones inside the head. So it is helping to open up all the capillaries inside there. And it's almost like oiling your plumbing, right?
Mm-hmm.
If your pipes are well oiled, the water is going to flow without obstruction. So similarly, once all these capillaries and sinuses are open, there'll be drainage. So people normally have this, like they'll have drainage in the throat. Once all that is cleared out, what's happening is the mind is getting calm. So when we did the bowel movement, we released the vata. And that way we strengthened our heart and our emotions. And then that has an effect on our mind, right? So our mind also became calm.
Mm-hmm.
So we've fixed the bottom, we've fixed the top. Now we are ready.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are ready to move forward into bathing rituals.
Oh, fantastic. Now here, talking about Brahma Muhurta, you know, once I was giving a talk on Brahma Muhurta. So we had a lot of Scandinavians there.
Mm-hmm.
So for Scandinavians,
right.
sometimes, or even people living in the northern Arctic part, Iceland, Russia.
Right.
So they would have sometimes, you know, during the June 21st, the solstice times, mm-hmm. when the days are long, the sunrise will be like this, sunrise will go on.
Mm-hmm.
And during the summer time, sunrise could be at 3 a.m. So that means, so
Brahma Muhurta is one.
Where should I follow this Brahma Muhurta? What should I go back?
Yeah.
So I spoke to some of my professors and they came to an understanding. Let's just stick to this idea. I mean, so on one hand, we also have to look back where Ayurveda was written was during the tropical climate.
Right.
And even though India has many different climates,
mm-hmm.
like we have the snow, we have the desert, we have the tropical climate, and mm-hmm. we have the dry and all the extreme climates mm-hmm. as well. So when it comes to this, people living in the northern Arctic part,
mm-hmm.
so let's just stick to somewhere between 4:30 and 6.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is the time
mm-hmm.
that could come as Brahma Muhurta.
Right.
Because the movement of the sun, it works well people closer to the equator or to some of the meridians.
Right, right.
But as they go closer to the Arctic or the
wacky.
Antarctic part, it can be a bit differentiating. So people, you know, who are listening from the Scandinavian countries or the northern European parts, I would just like to clarify, let's keep 4:30 and 6 as an ideal time for Brahma Muhurta. If you can manage that, that mm-hmm. itself will make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add something here to mm-hmm. the excellent understanding and the, you know, the guidance you've given here. That is excellent. The way vata would move in the atmosphere totally depends on the sun. And it depends on the moon as well. So not going into too many details. But if the sun was rising at 3 p.m. somewhere, it is 3 a.m.
Yep.
Sorry, 3 a.m. somewhere. It is 1000% for sure that the prahara, the 3 hours before sunrise, are going to be the vata period.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, it's crazy to wake up at 1 a.m. and then say, I am waking up at Brahma Muhurta, how good am I,
mm-hmm.
right? But when they keep sleeping after sunrise, they are in a kapha phase. The prahara, the 3 hours after sunrise is kapha phase. So, now they know that when the sun rose at 3, they woke up at 4:30. So 1.5 hours of, they have increased kapha in their body. So they have to now balance that out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do dinacharya, diet and lifestyle, to balance that excess of kapha, they're going to be fine.
Mm. That's the trade-off that they need to do, and also the climate that they live.
Absolutely.
Like, so in that case, they will never find the kapha kala also.
Mm-hmm.
In places like there, because mm-hmm. the sun never sets.
Right.
Also a time of gurutva, heaviness mm-hmm. and darkness also.
Right,
so
right.
Since they see very less darkness.
Right.
So as you said, maybe in the summertime, they have to follow a little more ritucharya aspects,
right.
little more.
Totally.
That's where it comes into effect. So yeah. maybe we'll find another episode on ritucharya, like seasonal rituals that can be done.
I love that.
And regarding the kavala that you mentioned, so in Ayurveda, we have this oil called Arimetadi Tailam.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phenomenal oil that can be used for oil swishing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are multiple, I think I should find that research study and put it in my, in our show notes. It talks about when people use mouthwash,
mm-hmm.
the effect of damage it could have also on the good bacteria.
Right.
Whereas when they use an oil pool, mm-hmm. like arimeda thailam, or just plain sesame oil or coconut oil.
Right.
Of course, sesame oil is considered superior in those conditions, as mentioned in Ayurveda. But when you do that, your oral health is way better than a mouthwash.
100%.
Because it's quite strong. And, you know, I personally, this is my personal experience. Once I used a mouthwash.
Mm. Once?
Like, you know, I'm talking about once I used a mouthwash and immediately after that, I took a sip of coffee with milk and sugar.
Mm.
So you could feel that the changes that is happening to the milk immediately because of the strong acidic behavior of the mouthwash.
Mm,
So then I realized, oh my God, so this is also impacting my gut health.
Right.
But on one hand, after you use a mouthwash, you feel so fresh because it's like a nuclear attack on all the bad bacteria and good bacteria all put together.
Right.
So that's where maybe this oil pulling will be a very profound effect. And this can be one of the most powerful way to enhance your gut health, starting with your kavalam.
Totally.
So I think that will be a very good approach.
Yeah, you're so right. It, you know, to restore the microbiome, we begin with the mouth.
And still, using microbiome is still an enigma. I mean, we are still scratching the surface. And we don't have so many experts talking about microbiome. But still, to an understanding with our own feedback, we realize when we use an oil pull, it's a much more sophisticated cleanse where we don't feel it's a strong cleansing. It's like you're using a chemical pesticide versus a natural pesticide. There's a huge difference.
Totally, 100%.
So that's how you feel with the mouthwash, which is full of chemicals, and the arimeda thailam or sesame oil that you use.
Totally, totally. The way I look at it is that the acharyas did not talk about the microbiome, but they talked about protecting this body.
Exactly.
This body had a microbiome. You know, the body is built up of, 40-60 trillion, you know, bacteria, protozoa, virus, and all that, right? More than the body cells. So whatever they did worked for the microbiome. So for me, it's a no-brainer. Just follow Ayurveda.
It's totally true. And I think later when we have more research on microbiome, we'll be able to relate how these are actually giving the results for a healthier microbiome.
Totally.
But right now we are still, I mean, the gut microbiome, to a large extent, we are still in the infant stage of where it is useful for a common practitioner to prescribe it. But at the same time, we will see the results in future. We are quite excited about what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear more research coming out of Sitaram Ayurveda.
So, what are the next sacred rituals, Salila?
So the next sacred ritual would be the snana rituals, which are the bathing rituals. So this would start with an abhyanga. Naturally, we talked about oil pulling. Oil is the way we cleanse our body. Oil is the way we nourish our body. Oil is the way we strengthen our body. We restore the microbiome. You know, we restore all the healthy, good bacteria, bad bacteria balance. If you notice that, you know, if you ever have any underarm smell, and I would suggest that everybody try this out. Use a deodorant on one side, use oil on the other side. And then after about 3 hours, smell and see which part is more fresher. I promise you the part with the oil would be more fresher because that oil has the ability to kill the right kind of bacteria. So that the good bacteria that create a pleasant atmosphere and help with the cleansing of that part, they survive better. So Abhyangam is applying oil all over the body and allowing it to stay on the body for about 5 to 10 minutes. So again, not a lot of time because the acharyas actually counted, you know as a physician that the acharyas would observe through autopsies. They would use bamboo brushes and study how the body's various layers of tissues were affected by the lepams, the oils, the different medications. So it says that 4 minutes, 6 seconds is when the effect of that oil seeps into the marrow tissue. So once we've applied the oil and left it on our body for about 4 minutes, 6 seconds, and I just say round it off to 5 minutes, we are good. And then after that, if we can do a little vyayama, once this oil is on our body, so that our joints can get flexible, our body can, you know, the fascia can loosen up a little bit since it's morning time, right? Even just jumping in place, 3 sets of Surya Namaskaras or just some stretches, right? That is all we need. 5-10 minutes of exercise to just get the body started. And then taking a bath with maybe warm water, depending on the climate in the area. Using something called udvartana. So Ubtan, we call that in Hindi. These are powders made of barks and flowers and lentils. Mm-hmm. And they are not just exfoliating, they are beautifying, they are strengthening, they are nourishing. They give a juicy, glowy feel to the whole skin once we apply these Udvartana powders. So they are not just acting as a soap, they are mm-hmm. acting as an exfoliant, they are acting as a medicine, they are acting as a beautifying treatment. Mm-hmm. So we are applying this and then we wash off the body. I don't have time to do it on the entire body on mm-hmm. a daily basis, but I do at least on my face on a daily basis. And that's made a huge difference to the way my skin shows up. So that would be the third and the final one in the snana rituals, which are the first bathing rituals. The first one, right, yes. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And what's the next sacred rituals that... And also I'll come back to it sometimes, you know, you'll have single moms and mothers with a lot of kids. And at the same time, they'll be working... for some corporate companies. So when I talk to them, okay, maybe these are things that you should do. And I'm sure you come across such people who wants to do this dinacharya, and they say, Salila, I have 4 kids and mm. I have a job and I have a 5th grown-up kid. My mm. husband, sometimes mm. women do talk about their husbands like this.
Right.
And how do you explain this to them? This is something that you need to do it before you go for the job.
Mm-hmm.
That will be a challenge. Mm-hmm. Maybe not all of them, mm-hmm. but would you tell them at least get to this basic? So how do you come across and how do you help such patients with such questions?
I like to tell my clients that a woman is like the, you know, if there's a tent, the woman is the central pole of the tent. Mm. If she's happy and healthy, everybody in the house is happy and healthy. If she's sad, depressed, disorganized, depleted, and depressed, did I say depressed twice?
Depleted.
Then, yeah. So she is not going to be able to hold people together. And mm. we women are emotional creatures, right? Our emotions can get chaotic. And when we are not centered, we are not doing self-care, we are not strengthening that scaffolding of our body, of our ego, our spirit, we are not giving ourselves even 30 minutes a day, we are doing great injustice, not just to ourselves, but to our loved ones, to our community. Because it is our primary responsibility to show up as centered, happy women who can be effective managers of the life around them.
So it takes 30 minutes.
30 minutes is all we need. That's it.
So I think that's where we need to make them aware. 30 minutes is all it takes.
Right.
But how to find that 30 minutes, maybe that's where the challenge will be.
So we are breaking this down, right?
Mm-hmm.
The client that I told you about, who is the NASA scientist, it's not like these are all hard and fast and you have to do them at one stretch. Because they are in sets, you can break them apart. Mm-hmm. You can have that snana rituals after the kids have gone to school, after you've done with your maybe first set of meetings or something, right? Around 11. Or you can do that. You can, on a daily basis, have a quick 3-minute shower and do your snana rituals over mm-hmm. the weekend, right? You can do the Abhyangam at night. So that, you know, your work clothes are not getting spoiled. Because I have clients who are like, I have an Armani suit. I can't do a Abhyangam. My Armani suit is going to be destroyed, right? So,
but there's a bigger suit inside that.
yeah. So I tell them, do your snana rituals at night.
Hmm.
Pick what you can. 2% is all we are asking. And once we establish these good habits, the pleasure and the joy and the comfort and the safety we develop, that just tells us that the old way of being, we cannot continue anymore.
Mm.
We have to respect our body. And every year, we are only getting older.
Mm.
And if we want to stay around and attend our grandchildren's weddings, we have to take care of our bodies.
Definitely, yes. So do you come across people who still say, no, it's not going to work? Or were you able to convince them in spite of all the daily course that they have to follow?
Sometimes what happens is, even if they do just one thing, it makes a huge difference. And that's the beauty of the knowledge, the wisdom that our acharyas have given us. Just do one thing. You know, before we started this podcast, we talked about the domino effect, right?
Mm.
I have a client who started doing just Brahma Muhurta.
Mm.
And she was struggling to conceive for nearly 10 years. Once she started doing just waking up at Brahma Muhurta, centering herself in gratitude, she realized that the toxic situation, the friendships, the relatives she was around, all that, she was able to manage a lot better. She had more energy for it. Mm. She was able to protect her own energy. And like, boom, she got pregnant. Mm. And she was like, wow, I thought my body couldn't be pregnant. So just that one thing
that
made a
led
difference.
To many other mm-hmm. positive changes in life.
That's the beauty of Ayurveda. Do mm. one thing right, it will take care of everything.
Mm. Now let's go to the other dinacharyas mm-hmm. that you talk about.
Yeah. I think the sixth set of dinacharya, if I'm correct with my counting, would be about meals. So this is not a traditional dinacharya mm-hmm. ritual, but this is something that I've come up to help my clients manage their daily lifestyle. So majority of my clients are women. Mm-hmm. And we women, the worst thing we do is we do not eat good meals anymore. Mm-hmm. We have forgotten how to cook complete, satisfying, nourishing meals. We do not eat all the food groups. We just make something and we eat it and then we run and do all mm. the other stuff. And that leads to grazing, that leads to weight gain, that leads to hormonal issues, that leads to diabetes, insulin resistance, the whole can of worms, right? So I tell my women clients, even if you eat just two meals a day, when you're hungry, make sure that your meal is like a goddess's plate. Mm. It should have grains, whole grains, lentils, legumes, vegetables, at least 3 to 5 vegetables in a day, 2 to 4 fruit in a day, spices, wholesome cold pressed oils, seeds. You should have all herbs. Mm. You should have all this in your plate. Your plate should look like it was built for the goddess to eat, to enjoy. It should look like a banquet. Once you have that kind of a food, that's it. You're so satisfied, you are not going to be hungry for the next 3 hours. And that would be the second ritual in this set, not eating anything for the next 3 hours, zipping it up so that we are not grazing, because you know that that's going to lead to insulin resistance. That's going to lead to all that pre-diabetic issues, weight gain issues. Once we've done that, we realize that, we don't have to eat constantly to have energy. We have plenty of energy with the food that we ate already. So eating all the food groups, making sure that there is a space of at least 3 hours between our meals. And then every time we get up for a meal and we finish a meal, we have to wash our hands, feet, eyes, face, everything. Because this is what we did traditionally. Mm-hmm. If you remember in the olden times, every house had a little pot. They would have a little, scoop to go wash your mouth and everything, cleanse yourself. So again, we are kind of taking a break. We are releasing the buildup of that energy. We are refreshing and renewing. We are saying, now I'm ready for the next half of my day. Mm. This would be the next set of rituals.
Phenomenal. I think if people manage to do that, it will keep many doctors away, and that itself will, emergencies could happen, but it'll have a huge impact on their overall well-being, self-confidence, clarity of thought, and it'll bring more fulfillment, and they will focus on things that brings in more meaning.
Right, right. Absolutely. Mm. We live life not to eat. We live life to do our purusharthas, the dharma, artha, kama, moksha. When we are spending our life worried about controlling our diet, controlling the people around us, controlling our children's schedule, we are not living.
Somewhere, we are doing that because thinking that will lead to the purusharthas, but it's not.
Right, right. We're driving the car, the destination is far away. Mm. We shouldn't be fiddling with the dials.
So, Salya, what are the other aspects? So, it's 21. So, now we are at what? 7?
We have just done the 6th set. Okay. The 7th would be the final one.
Okay.
That would be our sleep rituals, because we are closing the
let's
night.
Let's get to that. That's very important. Yeah. So, let's talk about your 7th ritual. I'm curious about that.
Yeah, the 7th ritual is the closing ritual. So we started the day with ritual set 1 and we cycled through 6 rituals. And now with the 7th set of rituals, we are tying the bow nicely and ending it off. Mm-hmm. So we are going to go into a good night's sleep so that our body can metabolize all the toxic matters, and then our capillaries are open and circulating beautifully. The 7th ritual would start with eating our dinner within 3 hours of the sunset at the most. If we can have dinner at 6:37, that's wonderful. Congratulations. But if not, if you're busy, make sure that you're eating within the 3 hours after sunset. Mm-hmm. And then after eating dinner, it'll be amazing if we can just go for a walk. If people don't have access to a yard, just walking in place. If you can't walk, just sitting and doing soleus push-ups, which is just raising your heels about 100 times, slowly, you know. If you, you know, if you're challenged, you know, if you don't, you know, if you don't have the energy, it's okay. Just walk around the kitchen. Usually kitchens are big enough to cover 10 steps. I've personally done this. Like you walk 10 times in the kitchen, you've done your Shatpadi, which is the final set of rituals. And then after that would be doing a Padabhyangam. Hmm. So Padabhyangam, just like the Abhyangam we did to the body, would be taking some sesame oil or almond oil, applying it on our palms of our feet. Because like I mentioned earlier, the hands and the feet is where the energy escapes from. Hmm. So our body is like a magnet. These are the two poles, the head and the feet. The head also, energy escapes, but we have hair to protect it. But feet, because we walk so much, there's so much vata in there. And we put so much pressure on our feet. Our feet literally carry tons of weight on a daily basis. If we look at the cumulative weight that we carry on our feet. So we have to give love to our feet on a daily basis. Mm. We have to hold them. We have to caress them. We have to massage them like a baby. And once that we do the Padabhyanga, it is Nidra Janaka. Mm. It will help produce Nidra, which is sleep in Sanskrit. And then it is also Prasadana, meaning it will give a feeling of contentment and peace. So why is this important? This is important because the mindset in which we go to sleep is the mindset we are going to wake up in. So our brain, our mind is, can be a monkey. It can also be a very obedient dog. And we all go to sleep thinking anxious thoughts, working on our to-do list. And we wake up thinking anxious thoughts and worrying about our to-do list. So once we've done this beautiful ritual of massaging our feet and feeling content and happy and grateful, we go to sleep with God's name on our lips, like our grandparents, if we want to. Mm-hmm. We can extend that ritual a little bit more, make it as elaborate as our time allows. But if we've just taken care of our feet with a good foot massage, preferably, we, you know, if you have a partner, give one to your partner so it's even more pleasurable. Mm-hmm. We go to sleep in a good state of mind. We have pleasant dreams. We sleep deep and we wake up in Brahma Muhurta naturally to start all over again. So those were the 7 steps of sacred rituals to protect this beautiful body of ours.
What are your feedbacks that you got so far? Mm. You know, people would come back and say, I know, I wish I did this much before.
I wish I started this.
So some, you know, these are small wins that accumulate and compound and give you the much bigger changes. Like the story that you spoke about, one of your clients, you know, after getting up at Brahma Muhurta, that had a dominoes effect leading to even good fertility and even pregnancy.
Yeah.
And one thing that you see, today, you know, being an Ayurvedic doctor, you will see a lot of patients coming for fertility issues. The hormones are fine. The partner's spermogram is absolutely normal. And then they come, we are not able to conceive. What is this thing? Just get back to basics and set your emotions right. And if there is anything that is unspoken and stressful, let's get that also right. And once you put that right, it just gets back. I think once people follow these basics, they are centering in themselves. The word for health in Ayurveda, we call it swastha.
Right.
It's swa means my purest self and stha means connected.
Right.
So these are the passwords to connect to that inner rooter, you know, swastha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's what is happening when people follow these laws of nature to connect with them.
Totally.
So what are the feedbacks? I'm curious, like some of the top 2 or 3 feedbacks that you got.
It's phenomenal the way people come back and respond and give me appreciation. Of course, whenever one of my lovely clients or students has a baby, is pregnant, that's like my, that's when I give like a loudest whoop whoop, right? But rashes disappearing just by doing Abhyangam. Rashes people have had for months, you know, on their body, disappearing from just 14 days of doing an Abhyangam on a daily basis. Gut issues, restoring. Cardiac event resolving. A greater ability to focus, work better, ask things for yourself, stand up for yourself, saying no to toxic relationships, having good boundaries. It's amazing the spectrum of health that we get to experience in others, because we do this to ourselves and we can only, you know, once you reach a saturation point, when you, once you, you know, you don't plateaued, see, you plateaued and then you're like, okay, what's this? Unless you go back, fall off the wagon and then go back to ground zero again. But when I hear from people about the calm they have, the growth they are having, the relationships, their, you know, better relationship with a partner, better relationship with a parent, all these ways, you know, I say that the we are not just taking care of our ahara, vihara, we are also taking care of our vichara, our samskara. So the approach to life itself, our, you know, our mind starts to become a more positive mind, right? Because Ayurveda is about all that. It's every aspect of the human body. Plus, you always talk about how sharira means it is the body that eliminates. It eliminates, therefore it's alive. We learn to eliminate in all the aspects of our life, not just in our wardrobe, in our kitchens, in our relationships, you know, in our habits. We eliminate throughout our life much better. So that way we are lighter, we move faster, we are going towards our purusharthas.
So if we have to explain Ayurveda to the Gen Z or millennials, you'll say we are the Marie Kondo for the body, mind and spirit.
Totally, 100%. Declutter. Yeah, declutter your body, mind and spirit. Yeah.
So, Salila, I'm sure, you know, you also, you know, when I come across people and say I'm an Ayurvedic doctor, they think that, oh, you're living a very monk, saintly life.
Right.
But of course, I also have challenges sometimes with sugar cravings and other things. So among these dinacharyas that you help others to follow, I'm just curious, what was that difficult thing among this for you to follow, and how did you come out of it? And what was the self-talk that you did to convince yourself to follow that?
So the reason why I'm on Instagram and why I do these courses is because I am the laziest person you will ever know. If I am left by my own, I'm not going to do a single thing. And
so you're also putting an accountability.
My 100,000 plus followers are my accountability partners. When I show up and talk about Ayurveda, if I'm not doing it, then I'm a fake. And that is against my integrity. My biggest challenge was waking up in Brahma Muhurta, because I love my morning sleep and I love to stay up and, you know, potter around the house and sing and dance and do all kinds of stuff. So Brahma Muhurta was a challenge.
And
so
you see a huge difference, Salila, before Brahma Muhurta and after Brahma Muhurta.
It's incredible. It's incredible. I did a Dinacharya course. I did the Dinacharya course specifically so that I could get back to shape. And then I did a boot camp sort of a thing, a 7-day challenge, where all of us did these 7 sets of Dinacharya on a daily basis. And we woke up every day Brahma Muhurta, because Brahma Muhurta was the first ritual. Now, the days when I wake up in Brahma Muhurta, I have energy till 11 at night. I eat 2 times a day. So I have 0 energy slumps. I am going on and on like an energizer bunny till 11. But on the days I wake up in Kafakala, which is the 3 hours after sunrise, I am lazy. I want a snack. I want to take a nap. You know, I want to call up a friend and complain. All that is happening.
So, and also when you wake up late, you know, you have to again restart your whole day. And it also has other problems as well.
Right, right. So for me, Brahma Muhurta was the biggest challenge. And now I just wake up. I don't even need I have an alarm because I'm traveling now. But at home, just because the window is open, I wake up naturally. And then the first thing I do is the rituals and then meditate and then start my day.
You know the saying, you teach what you need to learn the most.
Absolutely. That's always been my motto right from high school.
Thank you, Salila. It was a pleasure. How can people reach out to you and access your courses and all the works that you do?
Yeah, reach out to me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is salila.ayurveda. And I'm the only Salila Sukumaran in the entire world. So if you Google me, you'll find me.
Good. You have a unique name. Usually when you have a name that is common, then it will be difficult. Thank you, Sarla. It was very nice discussing this concept with you, and God bless. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Vignesh. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you.